You're listening to What the Folklore, making sense of senseless tales.
Tra-la-dee-dee-hi-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-dee-hi-dee-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-dee-dee-hi-dee-ho, she lived happily ever after.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your storyteller, Carmen.
I am your crime weaver, Tyler.
Something sounds off.
Yeah, I think we might be a little bit closer than last week, but...
With this clone?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tyler 2.0 escaped the lab entirely and went far out of our reach so that no one could catch them. So we had to pull out this Tyler 3.0 clone, who does have a beard, so we're getting there.
Yeah. It is roughly Tyler-shaped.
I am human-shaped, right, fellow humans?
Is human-shaped. That last part, don't know why you said that.
All right, Tyler 3.0, what is your code name?
I'll take Eric today.
All right, Tyler 3.0, code name Eric, the crime weaver.
And I'm Gordy, the Vengabus driver. Thank you, at Karima Plays. I might have used that one before. I don't remember. If I did, then I'm still the Vengabus driver.
Time has become meaningless to us.
Sometimes I do that on weekends.
You'll have to catch me up. What's a Vengabus?
It's a song by some band, and then they use it in the Six Flags videos.
Okay, then.
Oh, yeah. We looked that up before. So you may have very well been the Vengabus driver.
Sure, yeah.
All right. We've got another Lucy suggestion on the table today. Lucy's getting all of our Tyler clones. We're going to France. France talks a lot, so we might be in France for a couple episodes, starting the new year off right. This is not a Dulnois, so don't get your hopes down, I guess.
Or up. Depends on
how you feel.
Depends on what your life is like, I guess.
But we are breaking all of our rules with this one. Not only do we have a clone in place of our typical crime weaver, but we are also skirting close to Disney territory.
Are we?
Yes.
Is this a Disney one?
Lucy threw us hard into the Disney lands, and we are reading Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast. Well, let's just watch the movie.
Well, this is a little different from the movie.
I can't see how.
You haven't heard it yet, so.
It was a good movie. Why change it?
I mean, the movie came
like,
first,
is
right?
It, this is a remake, right?
Yeah, this is a 1908 revamp of the, 94, 92?
I was going to say, is that before or after the Disney movie came out?
I mean, the Disney movie's eternal, so after, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, time broke a little while ago, so all of it's meaningless.
Uh-huh.
So this is a remix. Ernest Dowson translated this remix in 1908. And I am pulling this from archive.org, which was the link provided to me by Lucy. Thank you, Lucy. It helps a lot to have an actual arrow pointing so I don't read the wrong Three Sisters or whatever.
Sometimes it's good.
I mean, sometimes it leads us to some interesting new discoveries as well. But it's also helpful for my lazy butt during this lazy holiday season. Okay, so it turns out the French are super into descriptions. A lot of unnecessary descriptions, usually of ornate rooms, so that's not just Dulnois. Maybe she can be pardoned for her
but
story.
But did she cause it in others?
She might have. She might have been the origin point of that disease.
Yeah, is she patient zero for elaborate fairy tale telling? My money is on yes.
I would vote yes as well.
If I were a betting person, and I don't.
Because plot-wise, this is definitely a lot more streamlined and condensed.
How lavish are we talking about? Do I get, like, 10 paragraphs on how fantastically purple the curtains are?
Not specifically purple curtains. That would be a Dulnois thing. This is a little bit... This is, like, Dulnois light. So you get 3 paragraphs describing a room.
It's like Brian Jacques with food.
Right. So we're going to get into this. We're going to see how far we get before we just can't get any farther. And then a surprise for Tyler, who will be recording before he... likely before he gets a chance to listen to this episode, will be thrown into the middle of the story with no prior context.
That sounds like I've got a very short lifespan.
Yeah, we equip all of the Tyler clones with like a quick-release cyanide pill that's on a timer.
But what does it mean to be human?
You have like 6 hours to find out, so make them good. I don't know what you're doing here.
Maybe the story will help you out.
It Please. Will not.
It is a folktale. This has endured time.
Tell me this French folktale.
What's it called? Is it called Beauty and the Beast?
It is called Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, so they didn't change that up?
No, they They kept that pure.
All right.
Has Disney sued yet?
Oh, absolutely.
I believe company could retroactively sue for something that came out earlier, it would be Disney Corporation.
I mean, they could sue the entire French nation for all versions of Beauty and the Beast, because they did try to copyright that one holiday celebrated by that one culture for many hundreds of years.
Which one?
I think it was the Dios de los Muertos, because they had that movie coming out.
Coco?
Maybe. They tried to copyright.
They tried to copyright a holiday?
They tried to copyright Day of the Dead.
They tried to copyright symbols of the holiday.
Yeah. Good try.
Power move.
That did not. That did not work out for them. They're not used to losing. We might be in danger here. So, yeah. Lucy, we're throwing you under the bus if Disney comes after us for this.
I'd like to picture an executive throwing a tantrum. This helps me get through my day.
Good. All right, let's do this. Nearby, here, right now where we are, there is a great city that is kept wealthy by many prosperous men.
Is it Atlanta?
Probably.
It is.
Is this you talking, or is this the story?
This is the story.
Or is this like a preamble?
This is how the story introduces itself. Ah. So this places it in the context of near wherever you are.
So Atlanta.
So it is Atlanta.
Yeah. This does take place in Atlanta.
This at least starts in Atlanta. Including a merchant who had, in addition to his great wealth, a large number of kids. Specifically, he had 6 boys and 6 girls, none of whom were married because the boys were too young to give a shit about girls, and the girls were too conscious of how rich and wonderful they were, and found it difficult to choose among their many gold-digging suitors.
Ew.
Yeah, this is definitely Atlanta.
That's gross.
So while the ladies were enjoying the attention of the many gold-diggers in town, an incident came to ruin their prosperity. First, their house caught on fire. All of their nice furniture and deeds and all that, up in flames. Yep. No proof of ownership of any other property.
All their gold melted.
Yes, everything.
Just one big lumpy nugget.
Yeah, but they're rich, so they had fire insurance. So they're fine, right? That's how this goes.
I don't know that fire insurance had been invented at this time.
They were just about to invent it, and then this happened.
Maybe this is why they invented it.
Yeah, this was the incident that inspired someone. It's like, oh man, these people were rich, and they could have paid me to stay at least moderately rich. Whoops.
That's how it works, right? You just find richer people to feed off of.
Yeah.
This is something that's thrown me through a loop. If your house burns down, all your gold melts. It's still gold, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't look good.
It's
gonna get other stuff mixed in there.
Does it?
And it seems
gold
hard.
Starts with other stuff. In it.
It seems hard to like smelt out like a big nugget of gold.
Yeah, if it's got all like your furniture bits and deeds.
How are you going to pay somebody to smelt your gold when all you have to pay them with is the one big rock of gold?
I mean, chisel off a chunk. I don't know.
Mm-mm. Can't do it.
I've never been paid in gold. Too hard. I'd like to be paid in gold.
Yeah. Too hard.
Yeah, they just kind of, they bury that whole house and start new. Okay, so meanwhile, their dad's business took an ill turn because pirates and shipwrecks destroyed every ship he owned.
Good.
His man's having a hell of a day. Is this all like in an afternoon?
It doesn't really give a context of time, so yes, sure. That sounds good.
Did they also burn his house down?
The pirates?
Yeah, was this coordinated?
Yeah, they like launched off of one of his wrecking ships and threw a flaming torch at the house.
They threw Johnny Depp around the back to light fire to his house.
Yeah.
In Captain Jack Sparrow style.
He did a lot of drunken beam walking and rope swinging.
Yeah, a big, complicated, choreographed scene that takes like 15 minutes of the movie.
If you don't do that, then you have to write more movie.
Yeah, it's a good substitute.
All right, so the merchant had left to his name only one country home very far away from the...
Oh, no.
So this poor, poor person had many boats and a giant gilded mansion and a country home, and God forbid... He angered somebody so much that he lost all of it within the span of a day, except for his summer home.
Yeah, but it's like a little summer home.
Oh, I feel for him.
It's not a country club fancy home.
Welcome to life.
This does seem like he maybe pissed off one very specific person with connections in the sea mafia.
The sea mafia. It pissed off Neptune's kingdom again, eh?
Yep. And they called a hit on all of his ships.
I mean, they're the people to do it. Ship hit.
So he moved his family out to that faraway place. And his daughters had thought maybe that they could just make a choice among their many suitors.
So now they're trying to jump off the ship.
Right. Turns out that no matter how hot they might be, their greatest charm was their wealth, and the suitors don't give a crap anymore.
Is this the age of dowries where you still have to pay to marry off your daughter?
You always have to pay to marry off your daughter. Like, even these days, they'll...
Gotta pay for a wedding.
Yeah, the wife's family pays for the wedding.
Isn't a dowry like a gift, like, thank you for taking her off our hands?
It's usually camels.
Man, I could use a couple camels.
Traditionally, it's some kind of livestock, which I would enjoy.
Oh, goats are pretty cool.
I would like livestock.
Yeah, they're like hoof dogs.
With octopus hoof dogs. Eyes.
Yeah. give me a pack of hoof dogs that I can take to my new home with my new... Maybe just give me the hoof dogs.
Yeah.
I want to go through all the hassle of getting married for them? I don't know.
Well, it depends on if you want a baby incubator.
They are handy.
Wait, you incubate your baby inside of a goat?
Is this inside of a
human woman? The other property you're going home with.
I thought you were
going
to go like full Hoth on this and just laser the goat's guts open and stuff your baby in there. It's like, here, baby, you'll be safe inside this goat.
There is a problem, cutting open a goat is the next best thing. There's like a 5% chance that a baby can make it inside of a goat. It's like, it's not a high chance.
Now, is this only for baby related problems or all life problems?
Just baby. Like, there's like just enough of the right nutrients in that goat that it can just kind of suck them in. But it's got to be late, right? Like, they can't do it when they're really little.
So we need at least a 5-month-old baby.
Yeah, like last half of the pregnancy. If you need to do it, you can try it. I'm not saying you should. I'm saying if you don't want to go to a hospital, you can also do that.
There's only enough meat on a goat to last an infant 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hungry 4 months? I don't think I could last 4 months on a. I'm an unborn baby. I mean, I think
the major difference there.
Get like an afternoon and a half out of a full goat.
All right, so the suitors are a no-go, and it turns out that all of the people they thought were friends were also just fair weather friends, and were now taking delight in mocking their misfortune openly in the city streets.
I like to think it's actually their servants. Just. They've raised them. They've helped put their house together, keep it clean and tidy. And now they're just laughing.
Now they all have to learn what it's like to live as peasant women instead of being waited upon. But most of the sisters retain their delicate tastes and desire for fancy things.
They learn to work. Get a job.
The youngest daughter.
Yeah.
Is the best.
But is she older than the sons? Because the sons are younger than that, right?
Right. But she's still the youngest of a category.
Yeah, but she's not the youngest overall.
I don't think so, because she is old enough to entertain some gold-digging suitors.
To drive?
Yeah.
Get a license?
Yeah.
Buy a gun, maybe?
So she's at least, what, 12? This is...
Yeah, she's like in the 12-year-old range, and the boys are still in girls have cooties age, which could be as old as like...
11.
Yeah.
So we got at least 6 months of difference here.
Is this actually taking place in, like, 19-whatever?
The translation was 1909 or 08, so...
This could be back in, like, pioneer days.
Yeah.
Okay. Pirate days.
This is pioneering pirate Atlanta.
How long did pirates last? Did they get up into the Victorians?
There are still pirates, Gordy.
But, like, not like that. I mean, like pirates.
Like... Our
like
Navy
like movie pirates.
Movie pirates.
How long did they last?
I don't know if they...
They, I think, made it into the early Victorian age.
Did they really?
Victorians what? Late 1800s?
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Really? That just seems insane, because we had, like, iron ships. We had submarines in the late 1800s.
Well, Pirates of the Caribbean is set in, like, the Elizabethan era.
18-something, maybe. I don't know. It's a fantasy movie.
No, it's Victorian. Elizabethan would have been more elaborate costuming.
They also got a bunch of dead people walking around and some weird stuff like that.
I mean, that happens every day. You've walked through Atlanta, right?
Dead people walk. There's dead people in Atlanta walking around?
Yeah, you should go check out Woodruff Park.
What now?
Go check out Woodruff Park.
I've never been there.
You shouldn't, but you should go check it out, like from a distance.
Or maybe I have.
Use a spy glass.
Know.
All right, anyway. The youngest is the best of them and bears the poverty with more courage and fortitude than her sisters. She's very cheerful and does everything she can to keep the spirits up with her father and brothers. Screw the sisters, she's not going to try and cheer them up at all. Just the father and the brothers. Her father makes available lots of books for studying so that she can get educated, and she applies herself very hard to those and becomes very accomplished, like learns a bunch of musical instruments and can do math, I guess. And she wishes that her sister could follow her example, but they're more melancholy And, like, her cheerfulness just makes them even more bummed.
Just bad at math.
And in fact, they think their sister is mean-spirited to be so happy in the face of this poverty. Like, she should be miserable with them. Solidarity.
Because she pulled herself up by her bootstraps.
Yeah.
You're an awful wretch for trying to better yourself, and you should be ashamed.
Is she earning money?
No.
She's just learning it for fun.
Is she the one who burned the house down? She's the only one who's chipper.
Saying that she did it on purpose?
Yeah.
Like she was sick of their opulent lifestyle.
I mean, maybe fire insurance was her idea and that she was just upset that nobody went along with it. So
she's proving a point.
Yeah. Now she's happy because she's right.
But even though her sisters think that she's mean-spirited, you, the listener, should know that she is beautiful and adorable and generous and wonderful in all ways and super talented and perfect, and everyone but her sisters called her beauty.
So this fire-starting, fire insurance, fantastic idealist was the one who wrote this story.
There's a lot of self-insertion happening.
Yeah. We got
unreliable narrator going on. So 2 years pass in this woodland cottage, and everyone adjusts to the life of poverty when their father gets word that one of the ships that they thought was lost had just pulled into port, richly laden with merchandise.
So, huzzah, government bailout?
Yes.
The government's the armies of Neptune in this case.
So his daughters believe that this means they'll be restored to their former glory and they want to leave their house behind. But the father's more prudent, tells his sons, hey, keep bringing in the harvest. We got a lot of legal things to deal with when a ship shows up out of nowhere. So let's not put all our eggs in this basket. And he goes alone to deal with the boat thing. Before he leaves, the sisters all beg him to bring back all kinds of fancy stuff that would probably beggar a king if he had to bring back all of them at once. Beauty asks for nothing, but her father insists that she tell him what she wants. And she says, I just want to see you come home in full health. Like, that's all. I'm cool. I got sheep friends.
I think she's probably learned how that she doesn't need a mink coat to live in a dirt hut. Also, they're probably not living in a dirt hut. This is just their summer home. It can't be that peasantly. Is that a word?
Sure.
I don't know how many people buy shacks as a summer home.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a vacation spot.
So the father's delighted with her modesty and everything, but he does beg her to ask for something for herself. So she asks for a single rose. He gets to the city. He finds that his business partners thought he was dead and so had already claimed the ship and its contents in his absence. It took him 6 months of legal finagling to solve this problem, and the cost of solving it left him no more wealthy than when he'd started out. So all the stuff he made from the ship went to pay the bills.
So in their foresight, after their house burned down, they immediately just wandered off into the woods towards their country home going, whoop, everything's done. He didn't think to coordinate with any of the people that he consistently works with on a day-to-day basis. Just, whoop, yeah. Let's walk away.
He just left. Was found missing. They're like, well, I guess he died. And also all 12 of his kids.
I mean, that is not an unreasonable assumption to make if their house burns down and you can't find them anywhere. I might make the connection like, oh, well, I guess they died in there.
I mean, I can't say I blame his partners.
I guess they're in the pile of melted gold in the basement.
They're encased in it.
That's a good tomb.
he couldn't afford good transport and was forced to travel in very bad weather at an unseasonal time of year, which I think is fancy talk for winter. He's close to home after traveling for a while, and he is exhausted and it's snowing really hard, so he hides himself in a hollow tree all night listening to the wild beasts nearby. When he wakes up from poor sleep, there's been so much snow fallen that he can't find the road anymore. So he wanders off in the direction that he thinks is probably homeways and finds his way to a fancy castle. There are statues all around the grounds of the castle made of an unknown substance and approximately the color of human beings.
And this is the dad?
This is dad.
Okay. So is he going to have a romance with the beast?
With the statues.
How long has it been since you've watched the Disney version?
Maurice goes into the woods.
Uh-huh.
He stumbles upon the castle.
Uh-huh.
He falls in love with the beast.
Yeah.
He gets a library.
Uh-huh.
From the beast, and they get married at the very end.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he looks stunning in that yellow dress.
And then Belle shows up. She's like, it's time to go home, Dad.
That was all a fever dream.
crazy old Maurice. That's you. You fell asleep.
In the snow.
fell asleep in the snow. You're having a fever dream. Come back.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Very heartwarming. Did destroy my childhood.
Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah, because like this this nice old man meets the monster love of his life, and then it was all a dream.
I mean, it's ripped away from him.
And then it ends in the hospital scene with Belle holding his hand, is like, I don't know if he's gonna make it, and then cue credits.
Oh no, this is the movie that wonderful hero Gaston, who is great for everybody, right?
Yeah.
The one who the actual paragon of humanity.
Yeah, he's just there as a symbol of what Maurice could be.
Just pure virility.
See, this is the person we should be learning about. I've only got 6 hours left to live, guys.
It's a giant erection in every scene.
Yeah, he's just a human erection.
He is. He's modeled kind of in that shape. Just a kind of big, meaty
phallus.
Dad gets closer to the castle, and as he gets closer, more and more statues are on the lawn, but he's too cold to examine any of them closer. When he gets into the castle, he wanders around for a bit, and he finds a drawing room with a fire lit in it. He assumes someone's going to come soon, because why else would there be a fire lit? He warms himself up by the fire, and no one comes. He falls asleep until his hunger pangs woke him, and he wakes up to find a full table of food laid out beside him.
I wouldn't hesitate for a heartbeat to lay upon that table of food.
Well, he utters thanks to whoever brought it, assuming that they're probably somewhere nearby. Eats his fill, falls asleep again, a much more restful sleep, and then he wakes up about 5 hours later to a table filled with cakes and coffee and stuff.
It's the best fever dream.
Pretty good rule of thumb for fairy tales is do not eat strange food.
Typically, yes.
Yeah, like if you see this situation, keep on moving.
I wouldn't survive a fairy tale.
That whole scene in Pan's Labyrinth. Yeah, you would have the eyeball guy chasing you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but he's probably made of food too.
The eyeball man?
He was at the table.
You could eat him, I guess.
I mean, I would try.
It is an angle that movie did not explore.
Yeah, what if instead of trying to eat the food first, you eat the creepy thing first? That takes away, like, all traps, and then you can eat all the food.
I mean, he's probably raw and unseasoned.
He looks very leathery.
Yeah.
That is my issue. There's a lot of skin on there and kind of very little holding it up. So I think that would be an issue.
Look,
you spend a lot of time just kind of chewing on the blubber.
I mean, it might be delicious though.
No, I don't think so.
It does not look like it's been smoked or seasoned or anything.
Gonna say no, probably not.
It's in a wooden chair. You can make a fire pretty quick.
Maybe you're right, but
push it into the fire. I mean, all I'm saying is eat the creepy dude before you eat the delicious.
I'm saying the burden of proof is on him to show me that he's worth eating. He is not worth it until proven otherwise.
So now he doesn't know whether anyone is actually around because the stuff keeps showing up. And he starts feeling a little fearful because he's a naturally timid man. So he decides to go through all the rooms and just shouting his thanks into them and begging the owner to show himself.
I appreciate he's trying very hard to be polite.
I mean, that's good ideals. I can't really fault the man for this. He ate a delicious table's worth of food and then wants to make sure whoever made it for him is happy. That's fair. This person is doing right in life.
He has no luck in finding the owner, so he gets the thought that maybe it's just like a haunted house, haunted by like a nice spirit. And it really is abandoned, and therefore up for grabs. So then he starts picking out which rooms he's going to have for each of his daughters.
He should have spent more time at the food table.
He doesn't need a deed.
Nah, like he just found a castle and it's his now. So he wanders out to get his horse so that he can go grab his family and bring them back to the sweet new digs he found, where when he sees a bunch of roses in bloom. And he picks one when very suddenly behind him there's a beast that puts a trunk like an elephant on Dad's neck and bellows, "Who gave you permission to take my roses? Was it not enough that I gave you all that food and hospitality?" Dad fellow begs, I guess through the trunk on his throat. I don't know if the trunk's just like resting on his throat as a threat of I could do something or if it's like a chokehold.
Is it like an actual elephant trunk?
It's a trunk like an elephant.
But something like he's got a big noodle.
Yeah.
That he can move around in front.
Noodle. Yeah, a muscle noodle.
A muscly noodle coming out of his face.
Yeah.
I think I like that.
Yeah, I think Disney missed an opportunity.
To have
a Snuffleupagus.
Kind of an illithid looking guy.
Yeah.
If it was like a squid beast, that movie might have turned out different.
Just a chimeric monster.
Yeah,
they
made that beast look a little bit too, I guess, like pleasing to the eye.
Big fluffy dog bear man.
Yeah, like his proportions are kissable. Nice.
Yeah.
The Beast, right? He hasn't shaved in a little bit.
He looks better than his human prince form. His human prince form is real disappointing. Yeah,
again, like trading down. Stay the very strong, very fast bear that he was.
And we have a whole ramble cast dedicated to this.
Go back and revisit.
Wasn't he an immortal bear at that time, too?
It's unclear whether he was immortal.
I don't know.
But he's definitely, like, stronger than a 17-year-old whiny boy.
That's true.
Yeah, but Disney could have made him truly horrific, and I feel like they took the wimpy way out. So the dad begs that he's not ungrateful, and that he thought that after all that generosity, something so small as a rose would not be minded. And the Beast shouts, "Silence your cursed babble," and then threatens to kill him. Instead of silencing his cursed babble, or silence cursed babbler, and threatens to kill him. And instead of silence, he babbles more about how he's just grabbing the rose for his daughter, and how she's so modest and wonderful and the best. And he just wanted to bring one thing back for one kid, so that not all of his kids would be disappointed in him.
Somebody should have posted the rules outside their castle.
No roses,
food
only.
Food yes, roses no.
Yeah, I mean,
very, very simple sign.
Could have had a conversation. I feel like the Beast Man is escalating this unnecessarily. Could have, you know, used words. Because he can.
One sign.
I mean, he is using words. He's just using them to threaten murder.
I mean, and too late.
Yeah, late in the game. That's my issue. Threatening murder is perfectly fine, so long as you do it while you're clearly stipulating the rules.
So the Beast thinks for a moment after hearing about this, and he says, cool. I will not murder you if you bring me back one of your daughters.
Oh, this sounds fun. Bring me one of those.
Probably the good one you keep talking about.
That would be ideal.
I got roses.
The merchant protests this, and the Beast insists, like either you die or you do this for me. But also, further stipulation, that daughter has to come of her own accord.
Just a reminder of, hey, look, I could snap you like a twig. My muscle noodle is currently wrapped around your throat, so let's move this along.
That's what they call it.
Go get your woman.
So promise that in 2 months you will come back either with one of your daughters in tow or by yourself to be killed.
That's not a good deal.
If you don't come back in 2 months, I will hunt you down and kill your whole family.
That's a little better.
I mean, that's collateral.
Yeah, that does need to be there because otherwise it's like you need to promise to come back.
Yeah, you bet, Beast. Totes be back here.
A viable ultimatum.
Yeah. So the merchant promises, and the Beast lets him rest for the night and gives him breakfast in the morning and reminds him of his promise and makes sure that the merchant knows that he needs to make it clear to his daughters exactly what they're getting into. Like, don't leave out any details. Describe every last horrifying detail of my face to them. Like, make sure that they know they're going to vomit in their mouths a little when they look at me.
There's 10 elephant trunks coming out of my head.
I mean, this dude's just a lonely but very amenable Hulk monster.
Yeah, amenable in that he...
Hulkophant,
yeah.
Sort of amenable.
I mean, food.
All right, so Dad Merchant rides home on the provided horse and has a long conversation in his head about what he's going to do. He tries to turn back to just let himself be killed so he doesn't have to go face his daughters with this ultimatum, but the horse will not turn back. So he figures, well, I just won't tell them about it and I'll make some excuse and leave again in 2 months and just not come back.
And he's got 5 awful daughters and 1 good one. And he's just like, oh, no. I'm such a good person that I love my kids. This dude's too nice for the story.
Well, also the daughters have to come of their own accord. And he knows awful daughters are not going to make that offer.
I mean, if he were a more evil person, he could easily butter them up with, hey, look, rich, a table that magically produces food all the time. Yeah, all the fineries in life.
Beast seems pretty insistent that he, like, lay out the situation clear cut.
Yeah, like, you are going to vomit in your mouth every time you look at me.
I mean, come on. Silver tongue can get you a long way in life.
So the merchant gets back to his worried family with only a rose to show for his journey, so I guess the Beast let him take that. And his daughters berate him that it must have cost him very dearly to buy this rose and nothing else for them. And he says, yeah, it cost me a lot more than you think it did.
Dun, dun, dun.
So they push him, and his resolve to just, like, keep his silence on this breaks very quickly, and he tells them the whole story.
I mean, otherwise the Beast would murder his whole family. I think that's a...
Well, he was just going to go back and get killed. Mm. Like, he had three options: bring daughter, sacrifice self, or sacrifice whole family. So the daughters are horrified to hear this, and the brothers proclaim that they will not let him go back, and they'll kill the beast if he comes for them. But he says, no, I am a man of honor. I gave my word, and I'm going to follow through on it. So the sisters all turn on Beauty. Says, if you hadn't asked for a rose, you greedy bitch, this wouldn't be happening.
Jesus.
And Beauty agrees, yeah, this is definitely my fault. So I'm going to go back as the human sacrifice.
Now, hold on. I can only picture this conversation having been like the most sarcastic response possible. It's like, oh, yeah. No, I'm the asshole here. Let me go die on this.
You can picture that as sarcastic as you want, but remember, she's adorable and perfect.
Oh, right. She wrote this.
Yeah.
Unless that's also sarcastic.
Then there are like paragraphs of angst surrounding this decision.
What? Yeah.
Like, just the story just goes on with the family arguing back and forth for a while.
I can fill that in. Yeah, I can fill that in.
So she's optimistic that this might work out for the best for her. Like, maybe it will be real cool to hang out with the monster. But her sisters are taking pleasure in the idea that she's just going to suffer forever. Her father suddenly remembers a prophecy that he heard at some point somewhere that one of his daughters was going to save his life and also bring happiness to his family. So he's pretty chill with this plan now.
Is this just, like, so in the story when you read this, is that just a drop in? Oh, yes. Yeah, I suddenly remember this prophecy.
Yeah. No, he's in the middle of these paragraphs of them arguing back and forth. He's like, oh, yeah, it was prophesied to me that one of you would save my life. Nah, we're cool.
It's very convenient.
So at this point in existence, are prophecies still getting thrown around this casually?
Oh, yeah.
Like, your everyday Cassandra going on?
Like, our current point in existence, I'm sure there are prophecies everywhere.
Have we just become, like, numb to them?
Yeah.
There's like, so many prophets, we don't care anymore?
Like, weather reports. That's basically prophecy.
They're all on Twitter, and they all have shitty takes. You just kind of weed them out.
So, Dad and Beauty ride to the castle at the appointed time, and he tells her, hey, like, just to remind you, you might not want to go through with this once you see him. You will vomit in your mouth. And she says, well, all I'm expecting out of this right now is a hasty death. So anything less bad than my immediate murder is going to be okay by my standards. It's cool.
She sounds like an optimist.
So they get to the palace and there are lamps lit everywhere and monograms of Beauty and the Beast's names everywhere. So just BB all over, I guess.
BB. Is that actually what they're called in the story?
Yeah.
Beauty and Beast.
Yeah.
So... Beast, I guess, naturally assumed that this modest daughter of... Is he spying on them? Like, and he's just like... I just picture him looming through the window while this whole family is just like going back and forth arguing with their, I guess, six kids that matter in this case about what's going to happen. And he's just looming, peeking. He's like, oh my God, yeah, someone's going to come see me. And then just like runs back and has the whole castle redecorated.
I mean, that's a possibility. It's a possibility that he listened to the merchant carefully and was like, nah, those other kids suck. Like, there's only one chance, and it's that one.
Did he make the prophecy?
The Beast?
The Beast.
Maybe.
Yeah, did he feed that to him in the middle of that conversation? Did he put, like a tiny speaker on him?
Full disclosure, even I don't know the ending of this friggin' story. I haven't made it there yet.
He put a chip in his head.
It's been a busy holiday, so I got, like, halfway through.
And he can beam messages directly into this man's skull.
Yeah.
He's got an elephant trunk.
He does. We don't know what it can do.
It's like a radio antenna. He just kind of zaps electrons toward the... Is that how radios work?
Yeah, they're just zappers.
Man, I don't know. Radios are magic, man.
Artillery announces their arrival, and they're like, well, this is pretty cool. He's awfully pumped to eat me.
Artillery?
Yeah.
So he's also heavily armed.
Yeah.
Would you have a castle without cannons?
No. I wouldn't, but again, I'm comparing this to the movie where he defended his castle with anthropomorphic furniture and silverware. If he had artillery, that might have gone down a little bit different. Because I bet those guys were mad at the Beast. I don't know if they're mad enough to walk through cannon fire to get there.
Look, I know which version of the Beast is warming my heart right now. And it's the one with cannons.
And a trunk.
That he can use to light many cannons at once.
Control mines.
With his 10 sprawling trunks.
Prophecy trunk.
All right, so they're pretty excited. Like, they're like, He's super pumped to eat you. This is like a wedding setup. You're going to have the coolest death. Like, this is the sweetest sacrifice that we could ever imagine. They get to the castle and a feast is set out for them. And Dad is familiar with how the beast operates. So he's like, yeah, this is just how he does. We can sit and eat. This is for us.
Did the whole family go? Or is it just him and his daughter?
Just him and his daughter.
Okay.
Then a frightful noise caused by the enormous weight of the beast's body and the terrible rattling of his scales and by an awful roaring announced the coming of the beast.
Cool.
So he has scales and a trunk.
His scales just whispering silently, I have arrived.
It's me, Mr. Beast. So she is terrified, but manages to recover herself enough to greet him like a person, which pleased him immensely. And he wished both of them a good evening. And even though he was talking pleasantly, his voice was just terrifying. Just a monstrous, horrible voice.
You know, it's kind of nice that he decides to take the time to actually be a decent host this time and talk to his guest before he's threatening them with death.
So he asks Beauty, are you here of your own accord? And she says yes. And then he says, well, what do you expect to happen to you? She says, whatever, I'm at your disposal. I don't care.
You do what you want with me. That's weird.
And he says, your docility pleases me.
That's not creepy at all.
But that's kind of run of the mill for the time period, I think.
Yeah, he has not grabbed her out of a field and thrown her on a horse, so.
Yeah,
I
not
mean,
quite,
this is almost chivalrous in comparison to some of the other princes we've met. So he says to the dad that, like, hey, stay the night again. I know it's a long drive. Feed you breakfast in the morning, and then I'll give you a horse and everything. But you're not coming back. That's a one-way ticket. So don't expect to ever see this place again. Also, there are two trunks that you'll find. You can fill them with whatever. We got lots of fancy dresses, jewels. I don't give a shit. Fill them up. Bring them back to your family. All good.
So, like, he removed trunks from his face, sat them down. It's like, here. Stuff these with goods and flee.
Sure,
stretch it open.
That's
like a
more
bag.
Fun than like chests.
I mean, we've already established that the dude's got trunks on his face. I just assume that they're also like bags of holding.
Sure, yeah, that sounds fun. So Beauty goes to help her dad fill the trunks. He fills them up with dresses first, and then they find the gold and jewels. And she's like, "Hey, you should do this. Like, pull out some of the dresses and do these instead, because money will be ultimately more useful to you.
Money's more important than satisfying your brat children."
Yeah, and he's like, nah, I can't disappoint them. They'll eat me alive.
They're all horrible.
So he just puts the jewels in with the dresses, and luckily dresses are, like, malleable, and they squish. So the jewels fill up the trunks pretty nicely, so he's super fucking rich.
Them boys get nothing.
I mean,
all six of those boys, nothing for them.
They get inheritance. This is the age we're talking about. The girls won't get anything.
Yeah. You make up for gender inequality with fancy dresses.
Well, one of them will get inheritance. Five of them get nothing.
So the trunks are really heavy, and he's anxious that the beast is just pulling a trick on them, and Beauty's like, chill, Dad. I'm sure he's got this figured out. And turns out, yeah, he does. He has horses carry the trunks and another horse for the dad. So dad leaves. Everything's cool. After saying goodbye forever, Beauty goes to her room for a nap because she has not really slept in a few days. Finds a cup of hot chocolate next to her bed, drinks it, and falls into the best sleep of her life.
So he's pulling like the fast Cosby on her?
Yeah. She dreamt about a hot guy who tells her, hey, it's cool. Things are not going to be as bad as you think they are. And says in like 4 different ways throughout this conversation not to judge by appearances. And then the dream ends with a fancy lady showing up and telling her, don't regret what you left behind, because things are about to get way more bitching for you. And also, don't be led astray by appearances. So I think we're like pushing toward a point here.
So what we're actually getting towards is the beast is trying to riddle this girl's mind. This is, Stockholm Syndrome? He's just trying to drill that into her head early on.
Yeah, real fast. So she has about 5 hours of dreaming about this hottie hotcakes, and he shows up in 100 different places talking to her, doing a bunch of different stuff.
Did he incept this into her?
Yeah.
With his many trunks?
Yeah, one of the trunks is the inception machine.
It's the psionic trunk.
Rubbing her head while she sleeps. Rubbing the dreams into it.
Whispering. He has a tape recorder in one of his other trunks, and it's just playing.
They just run down the pipe of his trunk. and drip into her head.
Tadu.
The good dream liquids that he makes inside his head.
The dream goop.
That he makes it naturally in this beast form.
Look, if there's a creature that just secretes dream goop from its many, many trunks, I'm going to be honest. I'm hunting that beast down and I'm going to have one.
You're going to drink it?
I'm going to drink the dream goop and let's see how weird this ride gets.
So she wakes up to the clock striking 12 and each strike repeats her own name and music.
That's creepy.
Yeah, that would be a very surreal way to start your time here.
Yeah.
She gets dressed with all the nice stuff that she sees laid out for her and throws herself on the sofa to come to the conclusion that the dream hottie is definitely a prisoner of the beast and she has to free him somehow. Then she thinks about it more and is like, nah, dreams are nonsense bullshit and it's silly to give them a second thought.
I mean, that's the smart thing as, you know, a normal functioning human to do, but she's doing fairy tale girl kind of wrong.
Yeah. Well, then she wanders around the castle to look at shit. And pretty quickly she finds a bracelet hanging off of a chandelier, like they do.
Uh-huh.
And the bracelet has a little locket thing with the hot guy's portrait in it. So now she starts thinking maybe those dreams are onto something after all.
A sign.
She pulls the bracelet off the chandelier and puts it on without a thought about whether or not it's a crime to just steal a bracelet from a chandelier.
I think she lives there now, though. And
yeah.
Chandeliers are free, like just public domain.
Okay.
It's like a park.
Okay, so if for example, you were to move in here and just like start taking our swords off the wall because you live here now. Public domain.
Yeah, but that's only if you put up a chandelier.
Okay.
And it's only in the room you have the chandelier in. This is why rich people only put them in their like foyers where they keep just their garbage couches.
This is the one you don't want to sit on. It just looks good.
Yeah, no. It's actually made out of tin foil and paper mache.
She continues wandering and she finds a hall of portraits with a life-size portrait of the hot dude. And she also finds a library, which makes her real happy, and just like in the movie, and a couple other things. That night, the beast joins her for dinner and asks her what she did all day. So she tells him about the things she found and he asks if she thinks she'll like staying here. And she's like, yeah, you know, it's a pretty cool palace. Got some stuff going on. I can find some entertainment. As they converse, she notices that his voice is only terrible because of the organ of speech, which is maybe his trunk, and that the animal was more likely to be stupid than savage.
10 trunks at once.
Which is quite a conclusion to come to.
That's mean as hell.
Yeah.
Just, you poor thing.
You're probably
you're an
just
idiot.
Dumb. Yeah, no, she's the best, though. She's so generous and kind and adorable.
And judgmental.
And intelligent. And, no, she can't be. She's perfect.
Look, history is written by the winners. Now, if the real hero in this story, Gaston, had won like he was supposed to, then this would be written in an unbiased perspective by a real hero.
Anyway, she comes to that conclusion, and then he asks, can I sleep with you tonight?
He means cuddle, right?
Mm-hmm. She's terrified. He's like, don't worry. You can give whatever answer you want. Like, you're not forced into this at all. So she says no, and he's really into consent, so he goes to bed alone.
That's very progressive.
This is a good moral for this story.
Yes.
Everybody, take heed.
Yeah, this is a lesson.
Float it out there. If she says no, go away.
Even if a horrifying trunk monster with scales who made a bargain with her father not to murder him in exchange for a daughter, you technically own her. Consent still applies. So she goes to bed, she dreams again of hottie hotcakes, and then spends half a day looking at his portrait in the gallery, and then half a day in the garden, surprised that she recognizes them all from the dreams. She also does a little bit more wandering, and she finds an aviary of birds, wishes that her room was closer so that she could hear their birds screeching, and lo, a door opens, and it was her room.
I've had a bird near me while I was sleeping, and the last thing I ever wanted was a bird anywhere near me.
Well, luckily she discovers the door closes when you want quiet. Like it shuts out the sound, but it can open whenever you want to hang out with birds.
It's a beautiful, magical aviary.
So she, after this discovery, wanders more and finds a parrot room. And then near the parrots, there's a troop of monkeys of all kinds. Some of which have human faces. Some of whom have beards of blue, black, pink, and green. The monkeys bowed to her as though they recognized who she was, and did some acrobatics to amuse her. She likes them and wishes that some can follow her and keep her company, so instantly a small group of monkeys appears in court dress and act as her pages and butlers.
These are Oompa Loompas.
That is awesome. This Okay, yeah, maybe this girl is actually winning fairy tale life.
More monkeys act out a play for her while the parrots do the voices for them.
Which play?
I do not know.
It's Hamlet.
Take a guess.
You're definitely Hamlet. Yeah. And there's a little monkey skull, and they don't tell you how they got it.
I'm sad.
But it looks fresh.
Was it still, like, dripping with,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
monkey bloods?
Yeah, their props master is ferocious.
Clearly.
Yeah, there are a lot more monkey antics. And dinner with the beast that night was a shorter affair.
How many pages of monkey dancing was involved in this?
There's so many monkeys.
It's magic.
So he just said goodnight to her after asking about her day. And so she goes to bed with lady monkeys helping to get everything ready, like making her bed for her and everything. So we will stop here and we can discuss.
This is a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Better how?
Just kind of like, I don't know, this beast is very, very progressive. He's being very respectful.
It's true. Like, so far his only regressive thing is murder for roses.
Yeah,
and like also,
there's...
like, wanting to own a daughter.
Yeah, that could be product of his time.
But he was very clear that daughter had to come of her own accord.
Yeah, like, he was insistent that, like, she has to know what she's getting into. She has to sign up for this.
Yeah, he is super into consent. This beast is so far a good example of what you should be.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's some, like, genuine good morals you can pull out of this part of the story.
But he does have a psionic trunk, and he is sort of, like, incepting these people.
He does.
And he was definitely creeping outside of their shack or country villa. I haven't decided which.
Now we did make up both of those things.
Yeah, but those...
Just for the record.
Yeah, the monograms and wedding setup for her arrival is not really touched upon.
I mean, what if another daughter showed up? Would it just been like, aw, darn, I...
Maybe all of them have names that start with B. Like, maybe that was the thing that her family did.
This is a fairy tale. We would have been told of that.
No, we wouldn't. The fact that anyone has a name at all is a rarity for a fairy tale. And her name's not really a name. It's just what people call her.
Did people have names back in the olden days?
Only some of them. Very specific people merited a name, and everyone else, royalty or not, was just referred to by descriptors.
You, field worker.
And the descriptors could change midway through a story, making it real fun to keep track of everything.
I don't know. I think the beast is doing things right. He's clearly got a whole bunch of monkeys in his aviary.
Yeah, his parrot aviary, which is separate from the regular bird aviary.
Which is fantastic, but they're also dressed up in little, like, royal court gear.
Only when she wishes for monkey friends.
She didn't ask for it, though. She just wishes. Clearly, there's some weird psionic magic nonsense going on here.
Yeah, you gotta wonder where he got the monkeys.
I mean...
Yeah, who they used to be.
Are we assuming Disney rules here and that all the living creatures in this place were once actual servants?
I'm not ruling it out.
There are human statues in the lawn, which are also not touched upon.
I was going to say, we didn't actually really comment on that, but what did it mean by, like, vaguely, like, human-colored?
I think, you know, a lot of statues you think of as being stone-colored.
Gray.
Yeah, these are human-colored, so the skin is skin-colored.
You know, a flesh-colored statue... would be off-putting, I think.
Apparently that's what the Roman statues looked like before time wore away the horrible paint.
Yeah, painted by, like, master artisans.
They were still, like, the recreations based on the chemical compounds of those paints still have them very garish.
Yeah, no, super flashy. That's definitely one thing the Romans were all about. But somehow I feel like this French beast man with his psionic trunks... I don't know. I feel like he just froze people in time and then stuck them on his lawn.
Okay.
Or sucked their souls out and stuck them in monkeys.
We're going to make predictions.
Okay.
Because we got to keep this part short and tight. I want us both to kind of throw a dart at the end of the story and see how close we get.
Okay.
Or about a major factor. I'm assuming it's going to roughly follow Beauty and the Beast, the Disney movie. But... I think that the fairy or the witch, what did it to him, is going to show up at some point.
I forget there's a root cause of this beastliness, probably.
Probably. All right. So cause is going to show up.
Yeah. Whatever it is that made the beast the beast.
Right.
is going to appear.
Yeah, we got a couple mysteries. Origin of monkeys, flesh statues, beastliness, and mysterious dream man and mysterious dream lady.
Yep.
Well, I think mysterious dream man, now here's my dart I'm tossing, is probably going to be our beast dude. That one seems a little too obvious.
Yeah.
But I figured I'd toss that one out there just because.
Especially with all the don't judge by appearances. Seriously, though, appearances can be misleading.
They really winded on about that in the story, didn't
they? They did.
Except in her case.
Yeah, she's beautiful and wonderful and best.
Inside and out, she's great.
Yeah, she's got a soul scrubbed clean. How do you think Tyler is going to do jumping into this sight unseen?
Oh, he'll do just fine.
I mean, so far it is roughly the same as Beauty and the Beast. Very roughly. So I think he can slip into it. But there will be things that confuse him, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we're starting with monkeys again when he gets back, so.
Uh-huh.
I bet we don't hear much more about her family.
That's probably true.
Because they're just off to live in poverty. Oh, right, no, they're rich. So they're done. They're good.
Yeah, they're set. Any votes on whether or not Tyler should know what story we're reading?
Oh, I vote no.
I'm going to say no.
Okay, so listeners.
I would like him to pick it up through context.
Listeners, you're on your own next week remembering what we're reading, or you'll be guessing along with Tyler.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Welcome to 2018. We'll be getting back to the regular What the Folklore next week when we will have Tyler OG returning to his seat to weave all the crimes.
Zen, and I have 6 hours left on my lifespan.
You got like five now.
Yeah, oh, no. you wasted an hour on this. Sorry. Good luck discovering what it's like to be human.
You know, I hear a lot about running through the streets naked is awesome, so I think I'm going to give that a try.
If you want to spend like the last four in jail, then go for it.
Yeah. That's where people go to congregate, right?
That's true.
Sure.
What did you learn about being human from this story?
Start fires.
All right. Sounds solid.
Start fires and your family will get free food.
So thank you, Tyler 3.0, codename Eric, for filling in the seat as Crime Weaver this week.
Glad to be of assistance.
Thank you,
Lucy, for tossing us down this multi-episode rabbit hole of the Beauty and the Beast tale.
Thank you, Lucy.
And again, we're holding you liable if Disney finds us. So, you know, just keep that in mind.
You did agree to that when you sent the email.
Yeah. Do you know they've already sued?
You should read the fine print of our podcast. But thank you very much. We will have fun exploring the monkeys a little bit further.
That's a phrase.
Thank you to all of our patrons.
Thank you, patrons.
And
for sure.
And to our non-patron listeners. And if you would like to become patrons, starting at $1, you can hang out with us in Discord, where we chat about all kinds of important things.
Yeah, it's a good time in there. It's very secret right now.
Super secret.
It's very exclusive, I should say.
So feel free to join us there if you are a current patron or someone considering becoming a current patron. Thanks, as always, Doug.
Doug, yep.
And thank you, John Waterbottle.
John Waterbottle.
Are you just repeating names? You're not even thanking them?
You said that part. I gotta save my energy.
Okay. Well, is there anyone else you want to thank?
Yeah, the whole list. That's... You know it by now. All the things and people we usually thank.
All right. We're What the Folklore. That's how it works.
Tra-la-di-di-ha-di-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-di-di-ha-di-ho, da-ha-di-di-ha-di-ho. Tra-la-di-di-ha-di-ho, she'll live happily ever after.
This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have any feedback for us, you can leave it either by Gmail or Facebook. Our Gmail account is wtfolklore@gmail.com, and our Facebook page can be found at facebook.com/WTFolklore. Feel free to send in stories if you have any particularly odd pieces of folklore or mythology that you would like to hear us talk about. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian Bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales.